Okay, well, then we move on to the Human Touch sessions in 1990. Now, this is these were recorded over a period of when basically your children were born.
Yeah, that was music that I was, I guess that's right, when we were having all our kids.
Yeah.
And
so it took a fair bit of time, this one, right?
Yeah, I took quite a bit of time off.
Because Evan was born.
Yeah, after our Tunnel Love tour, you know, I was going through all my personal problems, and I took a lot of time off to just sort out what I was doing, you know, and where I was going. I felt like I had a lot of success in my work, but I was just completely confused otherwise. And so I sort of, I took about a year there, and then I began to record just because I didn't have songs that much, just because I felt like I wanted to go work again. But it was really a time, the whole period was really almost like a hiatus, you know, where I was involved. Once again, I was just sort of trying to center myself and create a life that I had never had off stage, one that was, that would be, you know, that would work and you know, that was meaningful. And I think that we just sort of ended up somehow starting into those sessions just as sort of, well, let's book the studio. You know, I was kind of, had the exhilaration of working with the different musicians, and so anybody, I could, you know, bring different people in and play. And we just kind of, you know, worked away at it, chipped away at it, you know, until we came to something that felt was releasable, you know.
Hello, welcome to Rock and or Roll, or should I say welcome to Getting Bossy. I'm your reluctant host, BJ, and I'm joined by my co-host, Brian Sword from the Double Stop Podcast. Hey, Brian.
Hey, BJ, how's it going, buddy?
Good, how are you?
Oh, awesome.
And so we've got this little podcast within a podcast that we do called Getting Bossy, because we kind of flirted with the idea of doing a separate Bruce Springsteen podcast, but now it's just kind of folded into Rock and or Roll. So hopefully Rock and or Roll listeners like getting periodic Springsteen obsessed episodes, because that's what we're going to be doing.
That's right. And there's always lots to talk about with Bruce.
Yeah. If we were just together on Tramps Like Us, Lee McCormick's Bruce Springsteen podcast, that just came out, what, this week?
Yeah, it just came out a couple days ago. I haven't listened to it yet because I'm just like, oh, I kind of feel bad that not knowing how you felt about the record, I thought I was going to be the one kind of opposing view. I could play devil's advocate. I didn't know you felt even more strongly against that album than I did. So I felt like we kind of ganged up on him a little bit.
Yeah, we did the Wild, the Innocent, and the East Street Shuffle, and we just... Yeah, I have mostly negative opinions about that, but I wonder how much hate mail he's getting. Because, yeah, I can only imagine people that listen to that Springsteen podcast and then they hear me. So today, we're actually going to, in honor of what Bruce Springsteen did in 1992, we're going to be releasing two separate episodes on the same day of Rock and or Roll / Getting Bossy. In honor of the albums Human Touch and Lucky Town, we're going to have two episodes, Human Town and Lucky Touch. And so this is the first, well, I guess the first. I mean, everybody looks at Human Touch as the first because it was made first.
Yeah.
And Lucky Town is the second, even though they came out on the same day. I guess it's like twins, you know, one was born a couple minutes before the other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. Even though I think... Human Touch was a much more difficult birth.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, and then the Human Touch made way for the second twin to pop right out.
But exactly.
Yeah. So the idea is we're going to talk about Human Touch on this episode, and then we took the 24 songs that make up the two records and turned them into one album. And so we'll talk about, at the end of this episode, we'll talk about the album I came up with, which is called Human Town. And then on the next episode, we'll talk about the album that Brian came up with, Lucky Touch. So
I think that's the the big challenge here, was that amongst diehard fans, these albums are mostly universally disliked, whether it was because he didn't have the E Street Band or if it was just wrong songs at the wrong time or whatever it was. And the challenge for us was, can we come up with an album out of this material that is worthy of being a Bruce Springsteen album that even the diehard fans would, if not love, at least not loathe?
Yeah,
I think I did. I think I did it with mine. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think my album. I would say you're gonna have to re-record these, but as songs go, yeah, it's very strong.
Yeah, I have a similar note on that when it comes to my turn, but I don't disagree with you about the re-recording. But
yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the story is that Bruce played Human Touch for Little Steven, and Little Steven said, "Trash it all and re-record it with the E Street Band." That was his advice. Well, I guess Little Steven wasn't in the E Street Band anymore, so he wasn't saying do it with me. He was just saying, you know,
exactly,
redo it. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a time where I think Bruce would have listened, but at that point, he didn't.
Well, yeah, I think in retrospect, at some point, Bruce even said he was probably right. So, yeah. So basically, what happens is, following the massive, insane, unprecedented success of Born in the USA and then the live box set, which was also huge.
Yep.
He follows up that with an incredibly personal, stripped down record called Tunnel of Love. And the whole scenario, to me, ends up being eerily similar to the way he followed up the huge success of The River with Nebraska.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's kind of like massive success. Well, you know, I got to kind of put on the brakes, you know, I don't know. That's kind of what Pearl Jam did. Pearl Jam kind of intentionally sabotaged their career because they thought they were too successful. I don't know if Bruce did it on purpose the way Pearl Jam did, but, you know, it's weird that he has a huge hit finally with The River after struggling for years. And then he comes out with, I mean, you couldn't have come out with a worse record from the perspective of, I'm going to follow up my huge hit with this. And he comes out with Nebraska.
Yeah.
And so then he's coming off of Born in the USA, which, I mean, besides like Thriller, is there anything bigger, you know, than that? I mean, it's just about as, he was just about as big. Like I said, there wasn't even a precedent for how huge he was.
No.
So following up Born in the USA is like, what are you going to do next? Well, you're
going to
do
one
this?
More thing. That's one more point, though, is that he had reached such level of success with that record commercially. Almost every song was a single and a hit single. Is that, how can you go any further down that road? You can't.
Like, no.
You can't. Anything he'd done in that style would have been a disappointment because it could not possibly have reached that success. So he changed gears and went a different way. So whether or not he has an issue with success or if he just felt he couldn't go that route any further, it was his, he's taken it as far as he could go with that level of success and he needs to try to blaze a new path. Or if it was just a matter of, you know, he runs on whatever inspires him and that's, he doesn't care about success. He's just whatever he's inspired by. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, Tunnel of Love for the most part is a great album. It's not very similar to Nebraska, but no. It is, just if you look at, you know, the kind of the really weird shift in tone and kind of the strip, you know, Tunnel of Love is pretty stripped down. No E Street Band for the most part and everything. So
yeah, they're peppered in.
Yeah.
The story goes that he wanted to record it all himself. And then he decided, I'm going to bring in the E Street members one at a time and they can all take a crack at this. And I'll choose whatever one I like more, my version or their version. And that's why they're peppered in throughout. But some songs, you know, he played whatever bass for most of it. And then, you know, one song he won't, because he decided he liked the other version, the E Street version, better. That's the legend anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he comes out with Brilliant Disguise as a single, which, even though it's not a pop single, it's such an amazing song. Like, I know my friend Dan doesn't like Bruce Springsteen at all, but he thinks Brilliant Disguise is amazing. It's just, I think that's a song that a lot of people aren't huge Springsteen fans are still like, well, that's a good song, you know?
And, yeah, yeah, exactly.
But as a single, especially, you know, this is the album after Born in the USA, and the video, he's singing live because he said he would never lip sync again after the Born in the USA videos. He's just,
right.
I think the whole entire Brilliant Disguise video, he's just sitting on a chair like at a kitchen, and it's live vocal. So it was really, I mean, you know, Tunnel of Love was still big and everything, but the record company, some people at the record company must have been like, this guy's nuts.
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember at the time, like, it was a disappointment. I think that record found its audience later. Like, I recognize it won a Grammy. It was still successful. It went platinum very easily, but it was still, people were disappointed all in all.
Yeah.
And then I think it took some time, and now people look back at that as one of his great albums. But at the time, like, I remember people were disappointed. They were expecting another Born in the USA, and they definitely didn't get it.
No, there's just no bombast or anything on it.
No. None of that. Yeah. And, oh, can you imagine being his wife when that record came out?
Yeah.
Like, she reads the lyrics. She's just like, oh, boy.
Yeah, she started calling divorce lawyers right away, probably. Mm-hmm. I guess the E Street Band might have seen the writing on the wall already, starting with Tunnel of Love.
I think so. And, you know, he did tour with them, though.
Yeah.
That tour was an E Street tour. But I think throughout that tour, they knew that this was, you know, this was like breaking up with your ex and then having sex one more time or something.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah.
And that the writing was on the wall, that when that tour was done, it was all over.
Yeah, but what I found very interesting is that when Bruce a lot of people say he fired the E Street Band. I think Bruce tried to present it as we're just taking a hiatus. I you know, like, he called him up, like, he calls Clarence. He's like, hey, you know, you're going to be free for a while if you want to pursue other projects. You know, I think that was the kind of the way he presented it. But in the history books, that all happens less than a month after Bruce's 40th birthday. So if you're looking at, okay, he turns 40 and he fires the E Street Band.
Yeah. You know, he turns 40. He breaks up with his wife.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's now with Patty, and then he dumps the band. So, yeah, that was very stereotypical 40th birthday.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly.
What if he was driving around in a convertible, too?
Yeah, I mean, it really is the kind of the manifestation of what they call the midlife crisis. You know, here you have it. And then he moves to L.A., which I remember seeing him on 60 Minutes. It would have been like 94, 95, something like that, and just kind of being weirded out by his life in California. You know, they talked a lot at 60 Minutes about him leaving New Jersey and moving to LA, and it just all seemed kind of, he really seemed to be in a weird place at the time, and I think even Bruce, looking back, sees that now, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what Human Touch ends up being. It's like Bruce goes all California on us, I think.
Goes California, like, and he's also happy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, probably for the first time in his life, as in terms of relationships, he's very happy having children, you know.
There's one member of the E Street Band who doesn't get fired. She gets married. So,
well, and Roy. Roy's, you know, back around for this one, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Roy's involved. I guess the Human Touch actually started because Roy had some songs, just instrumental songs, that Bruce started working on. And I think that was kind of how it all started. So,
yeah, it's funny because those three, he plays Bruce these three songs. And Bruce is like, oh, my God, they're hits. We've got three hits here. And he gets all inspired. And away he goes. Now, I'm going to say, I don't know about you, but on my version of this album, there is none of the Roy songs. I hate those three songs.
Really?
Yeah, like none of them. None of them make it on for me. Like, he got in, the stuff that inspired him to start this project is weak. So, I don't know. It's a bad start for me anyway.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, there was the whole idea where Bruce is like, I want to play with other musicians. But then he just ends up playing with really bland studio musicians, like kind of the least inspired route you could go. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but he was also with people that would do exactly as they were told.
Yeah.
I bet you the E Street Band will fight for their opinions a bit more, whereas this time it's kind of an evolution of Tunnel of Love, where he's got a bunch of yes men who will do exactly as they're told.
Well, just the way I see it, one of the things Bruce said is, you know, I wanted to, you know, play with other musicians. He didn't do that.
No,
that's not
no.
why he parted with the E Street Band. He didn't try to put together, you know, some ragtag bunch of musicians and make a new cool band. He didn't try that at all. So,
no,
I mean, he says that, but that's not what was going on at all, as far as I can tell. And yeah, I guess the main thing about Human Touch is it just seems so uninspired. And one thing I was thinking, listening to it, is like a lot of it sounds, you know, after Bruce became so successful, there were a lot of copycats. And a lot of Human Touch sounds like Bruce copying the copycats, which, you know, so it just gets depressing at some point, some of these songs.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I'm not sure I buy that, but
I mean, I don't think he was consciously copying John Cafferty or whatever.
Yeah.
But some of it sounds like, you know, that's the level of quality we're at, is like one of those guys that was a Bruce wannabe. Maybe that's too harsh.
Yeah, I just don't think I buy it. I buy that he's happy. Like there was this quote that I saw. I was like, I tried writing happy songs in the 90s and it didn't work. The public didn't like it.
Yeah, that was at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, I think, that he said.
Yeah,
that.
And to me, this sounds like a guy who's, you know, his best stuff is generally pretty dark. And all of a sudden he's writing happy songs. It's like he tried the same thing on Working on a Dream. Tried to write happy songs. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't like that album.
Nobody likes that album because we don't want to hear happy stuff. Or at least if you're going to write about happy stuff, write it as elegantly as you write about sad stuff in Tunnel of Love. Like, he was so elegant in his writing on that album of unhappiness. Try to be that elegant if you're going to write happy, which I don't think he succeeded in on this one. And you can't say it's from a lack of effort, because Human Touch, he worked his ass off on it.
Yeah, Human Touch is confusing. There are some really good songs on it.
There are. I was surprised in my mind that I chose as many Human Touch songs as I did, because I think we both made the same joke when we early discussed this, is that, oh, well, we're going to do, you know, Lucky Town plus one song from Human Touch, and that'll be it. You know, and it's like, well, that didn't work out for me when I really sat there and listened and analyzed and decided what would make a good record.
Yeah.
There is. I found some good stuff on Human Touch.
Yeah, so did I. It all sounds bad, though. the guitar sound is bad. The drums are bad. And, you know, one thing, a lot of Bruce's vocals I don't like. There's way too much. What is the accent? Is it some version of a Southern accent? What is the accent he's doing? Because it really is more pronounced on some of these songs than almost anything else.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is it a...
You know what I mean, though?
Jersey
there's that
small town accent is, you know...
It starts to seem forced on some of these, or just wait, I don't know, there's too much of it.
And maybe that's speaking to the guy living in L.A. who really trying to figure it out now.
Yeah, I don't know.
If his voice doesn't sound authentic anymore, maybe it's because he's not living an authentic life in L.A.
A lot of Human Touch seems forced. It really does. It just seems like, I don't know. I guess you don't think it's forced. You're saying it's just because he was in a different state of mind, a different, very different place in his life. And I don't know.
I would say maybe it sounds confused as opposed to forced. Or maybe he didn't have a real vision, which is why it took so long. Didn't quite know what he was looking for, whereas the second one, he had a vision and he cranked it out.
Yeah, you know, he always had too many songs and a really hard time figuring out which ones to put on the album.
Yeah.
And it seems like a good portion of the songs on Human Touch are the ones that shouldn't have gone on the album, that should have been outtakes, but it ended up as the record. And yeah, I think part of the reason he made Lucky Town was because he knew Human Touch wasn't satisfactory. Like, he wasn't satisfied with it. He wasn't happy with it, but he had to put something out. Or I guess he felt like he had to get something out. But it's weird. He was always so obsessive about what his albums were going to be and what the theme of it was. And Human Touch really seems like he didn't know. He just kind of put it out, but it didn't really work. It didn't really come together.
Like, I don't know if at the end of the day he just loved the idea of the gimmick of two records on the same day.
Yeah.
I don't know. This came out after Guns N' Roses, who'd had huge success doing the same thing. But I think this exercise of doing this episode has proven to me what I suspected, and it was that there is a good album there, if just a single album.
Yeah.
It may not be a classic album, but there's a good album there.
Yeah, and it is. It's not long after Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, right, that he does this. So,
yeah, it was very quick. And I don't know if he just loved that idea, but should have been a single album.
Yes, definitely should have been, for sure.
But let's not pretend it wasn't successful. It was not Born in the USA successful, but, you know, both records went platinum in the States, went double platinum in Canada. You know, like, they still sold a lot of units, but I think it just left a little bit of a sour taste in people's mouth.
Yeah, they debuted at number 2 and 3, and the number one album was Adrenalize. So so that's the time frame we're looking at. Well, what did it say? The first week, they were kept out of number one the first week by Adrenalize, and the second week by Criss Cross. the two, like, prepubescent rappers that wore their clothes backwards.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
So that was, even though it was 92 and everyone thinks of it as like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, no, Criss Cross was number one.
Yeah,
so,
there you go.
Yeah.
And I just want to point out my never-ending complaint with Bruce Records. The worst freaking fonts.
Oh,
like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, they're just horrific. They stretched out gross with this really shitty drop shadow behind it, like, just really bad fonts, like, just terrible. I don't know what he's thinking with these horrific fonts.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen, an incredible artist, but not when it comes to his album covers, for the most part. I mean, that's what we've talked about before. I cracked a couple jokes on Lee's podcast about yeah
he just can't get it right, except like his early fonts, like Born to Run font, great, love it. Just keep that.
Yeah.
Adele's making a fortune off that font right now. She's got it on her albums.
Yeah, so one funny thing is Human Touch, the bass player is Randy Jackson, later famous for saying dog a lot on American Idol.
and in all fairness, he was in Journey, and he's a monster bass player.
Oh, yeah, he's just like a studio monster musician. You know, he's
Yep.
It's not like, you know, I'm going to go form this kick-ass band like E Street Band. Oh, I'm going to get Randy Jackson. I don't know. That's not really. That's kind of the opposite of the idea of the E Street Band, I think, in a way. I don't know. And Jeff Porcaro, you know, Jeff Porcaro was just famous for being like a studio guy.
Oh, totally. Yeah, he was in Toto.
Yeah.
But he was also, like, he played on Michael Jackson's Thriller. He played on all kinds of stuff in the 80s. And for me personally, the drums are a big issue for me on this album.
Yeah, they sound terrible.
There's something about the way that Max plays drums that fits for Bruce. And anytime it's somebody else, it just feels wrong. And like the way Max plays, he hits the drum and he pulls his hand up really fast. So it's a really kind of quick snap. And it's a very distinct style. Like, you always know it's Max Weinberg when you hear him playing. So anytime it's somebody else, it doesn't feel right. So this was a big example of the drums just so generic and plain, and there's no identity at all to the drumming that you really feel a loss that you get on an E Street Band. Josh Freese played on a couple songs on that Record Store Day he did a couple years ago, American Beauty. And so that one's got 4 songs, 2 rock songs, and then 2 slow songs. And Josh Freese plays on the 2 rock songs. Now, he's another very famous studio guy, but he was also in A Perfect Circle and a bunch of other bands. But he's a total studio guy. And when you listen to those songs again, it sounds weird. This generic drumming when there's such a distinct style with Max. So that's a real hit for me on this album. I can handle some of the bass playing, but the drumming just falls flat.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying. This idea, I'm going to play with different musicians, and then you get like the straightest studio musician drummer you could find. It's kind of kind of the opposite of the idea of I'm going to mix it up and play with, you know, different musicians. So
yep, I agree.
But the rest of the E Street Band must have been like, why does Roy get to, you know?
Yeah, he said he felt really guilty.
Yeah.
Being the only one left around.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I would imagine they were a little bit bitter at that. And definitely you miss the sax on these records. No sax. I don't think there's any. There may be a little bit, but there's certainly not much. You really miss Clarence. There's some times where there'd be a solo where it's like, that feels like it should be a sax solo.
Yeah. Yeah, just really thin production. Just not a lot of imagination going on at all, you know? That's what you're going to get if you just make it with studio musicians. I mean, that's what was so great about the E Street Band is, you know, Bruce would have this basic structure of a song and then it would become something else with the E Street Band, and that's not going to happen with Randy Jackson and Jeff Porcaro as your rhythm section. They're just going to, you know, they're going to play it well, but they're just going to play it in safe. Simple terms. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be safe.
Yeah.
Because that's really, I don't think studio cats get a lot of gigs if they start, you know, taking chances. They're there to record it well, safely, and get done and move on, because every minute count, you know, costs dollars, and get the next guy in. Because usually a studio cat, it's all about the singer. You know, it's going to be a Madonna record or something like that, where they just want to lay it down efficiently, well, move on, be precise in your playing, and we're going to get the next guy in, because really nobody cares.
Yeah. So I have to say, on Lee McCormick's episode, I said that Wild the Innocent was my least favorite Bruce album until Human Touch. Well, now after doing this, I probably even like Human Touch more than that.
So do I.
Because there's at least three or four songs on Human Touch that I have to say are really good. And I can't say there are three or four songs on that album that I would say that about. So,
no, listening to these albums over and over again and really kind of dissecting them, I actually, they came up a notch. So unlike you, I'm quite glad I still have them on vinyl.
Yeah. That was.
Are you going to admit your little sin again?
Yeah, I had the vinyl since the 90s. I sold them on eBay at some point, and that was dumb to do. But you know, it's still really hampered by the terrible production, and like I don't like the guitar sound, and a lot of them I kind of have a problem with the way Bruce sings them even, but there's still some really good songs here. And like Little Steven said, trash it to do it with the E Street Band, and then he would have had some great songs, I think.
Yep, I agree.
So do you think we're ready to go into your Wait, we're supposed to do my album on this.
This is your, we're starting with you on this one.
Yeah, okay, so I guess we're ready. You think we've talked enough about Human Touch?
Well, <At this point? laughs> we didn't get too negative. We're pretty good. I think we're better than on Lee's show. I don't know what else there is to say except this album took a long time. He really struggled with it. He wrote a lot of songs. I think some of those extra songs are on the tracks release. I don't think any of them are any good.
No.
So, you know, I think he made probably the right choices if he was going to do the double album thing. Obviously, I feel pretty strongly it should have been a single. But, you know, it was supposed to be released spring, summer 91, and then he held back until whatever, summer 92, I think it was, when March 92, when
right,
he released both of them at the same time. But this one sat on the shelf for better part of a year while he did the other album.
Yeah. Yeah, the idea was he wanted to write one more song for Human Touch. Like, he thought it was missing a single, something like that. And then writing that one song turned into writing a whole album, which is a very Bruce Springsteen story.
Yep, exactly.
All right, so I went through the 24 songs that make up these two records, and I put together a 10-song album. What I did was I had two lists going, lists of songs that for sure would be on my record, and then a list of songs that were maybes. And I ended up with 10 songs on the For Sure list, and I thought, screw it, I'll just go with the For Sures and, you know, leave out any of the ones I was kind of iffy about. Because
right,
when
I
ended up with
thing.
10, when I ended up with 10 For Sures, I was like, okay, well, there it is.
There you
know, why even?
Yep.
So then I spent too much time putting them in order.
I did the exact same thing. I'm not going to say which ones mine were, but I did the same style. Made the must be on, and then the ones that, you know, should be on, and then the ones that definitely will not be on. And then I compiled the same way. Yeah.
Yeah, and I looked at Make It at a 12 song, you know, because we've got 24 songs, so I thought use half. But when I was trying to take a couple from my iffy list, and I thought, nah, let's just go with the 10 that I thought were the strongest.
Yep.
And just make a really killer record, even though, like I said, re-record it. But song-wise, so this is interesting. My first song is one of the Roy songs that you hate. Roll of the Dice. I put that first. I really like that song. Okay. It's this is funny. Yeah, it's got a real. Even though it's, Roy wrote the music, I guess it sounds like a pretty classic Bruce song to me. But it is a happy song. Like I don't know. I guess the lyrics maybe are kind of, I don't know. But I really like that song, and I thought when I was looking at what would be like the album opener. I thought that's got like a good, it's like a good upbeat Bruce Springsteen sounding song. And I thought it would be, I really like it. I like that song. So I thought it would be a good
one. I know, your album's getting off to a rocky start with me, buddy.
Yeah, so I opened it up with Roll of the Dice. So that was funny when you said those songs all sucked. I agree about the other two, though.
Okay.
What were they? Real Man and Trouble in Paradise? Is that the other ones? Or Real World? Real whatever, I think.
Trouble in Paradise and Real World, yeah.
Yeah. So then so it kicks off with Roll of the Dice. Second song, Leap of Faith, which what's weird about, well, I guess we're going to talk about Lucky Town in the next episode, but
yeah.
All the L songs, L songs on Lucky Town, I was sitting here, when I was putting these songs in order, I was like, I don't want to put the L songs together.
I just think it's hilarious how different our albums are going to be.
Yeah, this is that's why you're laughing.
Yep.
But it's like all the best songs of Lucky Town all start with an L. It's really weird. Or most of them. But so Leap of Faith I put at number 2. And because I thought it was kind of a good... It's still upbeat, but it's pretty different from Roll of the Dice. Human Touch at track 3. That's a great song. I was surprised to see it was 6 minutes long. I never realized how long that song was. It is. It's 6 minutes, right? I never realized that before, but I saw it. That's one funny thing about iTunes is you'll see a song that you've known your whole life, but you never realized. You're like, holy shit, that song's five minutes long?
Yeah, it's 6:31.
Yeah.
Human Touch.
That's weird. That's happened to me a lot where I'll see a song that I never knew how long it was because you don't like go look and find out exactly how long songs are. But in the iTunes era age, you know, you see it. You see how long it is, and it's weird sometimes. But so I might edit Human Touch down. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. If it can be that long and never really notice it, then it's fine.
I have to say, I like the Rick Springfield song Human Touch more than the Bruce Springsteen song Human Touch.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That reminds me of, there was a record store in Milwaukee years ago where the guy had, you know how they have the dividers with the person's name on, like for, you know, I always go and look through just the S section, but they always have the dividers for the more famous bands and artists. And he had a one that said, Bruce Springsteen / Rick Springfield and had them all together because he hated Springsteen.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. I remember I commented to him. I said something to him one time about that. And and he was just one of those kind of anti-Springsteen guys, which we've talked about before. There's a lot of them for some reason. But I guess he thought it was an insult to put Bruce with Rick Springfield. So, yeah, Roll of the Dice, Leap of Faith, Human Touch, track 4, Better Days from Lucky Town. And then the last song on side 1 is My Beautiful Reward, which I think there's really good, like, ballady-type songs on these records, but they suffer from the production I would definitely change the production on them, but really good songs. And so those are all mainly like really like positive, happy songs, aren't they? Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's, you know, for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I opened up side two. I thought a great first song on side two was Lucky Town, the title track. Great rock song.
Yep.
Then track two, I Wish I Were Blind, which is another one of the kind of ballad songs, but it gets pretty upbeat, like the second half. Track three, Living Proof, which that's the one that he was writing as the single that turned into the whole album, I think. And
wow.
Oh. We're going to have completely different songs. Yeah.
We have completely different albums. Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Living Proof is Yeah, I guess it would have worked as a single. He was trying to write a single for Human Touch. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't strike me as a pop single per se, but it's a really good pop song, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Track four, I thought towards the end of the album, I put Soul Driver, which is, that's the second song on Human Touch, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of not really the style of song that I usually like that much. I wouldn't say it's bluesy. I don't know what it is. It's kind of weird. It's a little bluesy.
Yeah.
I think if I just heard 10 seconds of that song, I would tell you I would not like that song. But when I listen to the whole thing, it is a pretty cool song. I don't like the guitar sound, but I don't like the guitar sound on almost any of this. So.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, Soul Driver ends up, if you listen to the whole thing, it ends up, it starts off, I'm like, ugh. I might even just skip it and not even realize it's good. But it gets good, but it's definitely not the kind of song I usually like a whole lot. And then I closed the record with If I Should Fall Behind, which mm-hmm. I thought was a really good closing song.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got the three songs in here, My Beautiful Reward, I Wish I Were Blind, If I Should Fall Behind, are all very similar, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, and then there's the one with Every Wish that's pretty similar to those two. But I thought that was the weaker of those style songs. But yeah, so those three songs are pretty similar. So I tried to space them out, but they're all such well-written songs with really good melodies. So yeah, that's my 10-song album. And I have to say, minus the production, you know, they're all pretty much all great songs. So you've got 10 very strong songs, in my opinion. I guess not in your opinion.
No, there's some. There's some.
Yeah.
There's some that's the same. But some very big differences. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's my record. And like you were saying, it is, in my opinion, there is a really strong album in amongst these 24 songs.
Yeah.
And it would have been a much wiser choice to release that one album.
So do you think if he would have released that album as is with that, those recordings, those 10 songs in that order, would fans have responded better than they did?
Yeah, I think I have to think probably for sure. Even though there still would have been the problems with the production and everything, and not having the E Street Band and all that kind of stuff. Just song for song, they're very strong, well-written songs.
Now, taking those exact same songs and having the E Street Band support him, how do you think the response would have been?
Bruce fans would probably love it, I would have to think. There's really good songs. And yeah, if you get the E Street Band in there and do a great job of them, I would have to think I would love it. So I'm sure I would love it. So
I would agree. I would agree. I think even it doesn't matter that it's early 90s and grunge and blah, blah, blah. I think if Springsteen would have had the E Street Band and tightened it up, I think it may not have had the massive success. It may have gone double platinum in the States instead of single platinum. But would have been a huge tour, and nobody would look back on that album all these years later and roll their eyes at it. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's the album Human Touch that was the big problem, you know. Lucky Town, I think, is much stronger.
When you break down your songs, how do they break down from albums? I didn't count.
Yeah, interesting. How many are there from Human Touch? There's one, two. Well, I don't even. Which one is My Beautiful Reward from? I don't even know.
That's Lucky Town.
Okay. So I've got Roll of the Dice and Human Touch are from Human Touch. And Soul Driver, that's three. And then I Wish I Were Blind, If I Should Fall Behind. Is either one of those from Human Touch? Where's my track listing?
I Wish I Were Blind.
I Wish I Were Blind is. So I've got four. I've got four Human Touch and six Lucky Town. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, mine broke down similarly, which we'll get to in the next episode. But when you're saying that Human Touch was the problem, well, there's four songs, almost half your records from there. So is it just that the other songs are just so bad to you that they just destroy it?
Yeah. You've got like half of Human Touch is awful, you know, pretty much. I guess in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly, because I chose some of it that you didn't. So.
Well, I don't know if you chose 57 Channels, but I just hate that song. And that was like a single. He did it on Saturday Night Live, and I just think it's so...
The music video for it.
I think it's so terrible. It's not even a song. It's like, oh, I'm going to do a song called 57 Channels and Nothing on it, and I'm going to make it up right now and record it as I think of it and put it on the record. I mean, it's crazy. To me, it's not barely even a song. It's a one-liner joke, and that's it. There's what's the song? I don't know. That's one of the things with Human Touch is you've got the third song and the single is just like, what is he doing here? Now it'll be really funny if that's on your record, but
well, listeners will have to hang around for episode two to find out.
Yeah, like Human Touch, Gloria's Eyes, I think is horrible. Pony Boy. Yeah, there's really bad songs in there. Now, those are probably both on your record, too.
Oh, we'll see.
I had Cross My Heart from Human Touch was on my iffy list. And, you know, With Every Wish, I don't know. That's all right. That's pretty good.
Yeah, not for me.
I think it would be better if it was just him and an acoustic guitar. But, yeah, there's Human Touch has those songs like All or Nothing at All and stuff that just sound like... You know, this is a Bruce Springsteen wannabe out person or something. I don't know. I think I've considered Man's Job, but I don't know.
Oh. Oh. Okay, I'm going to get to that. I'll wait for my episode to get to that part.
All right. Yeah, so funny. We must have pretty different taste or something.
Apparently. All right. Well, I got to say, you got to do a vote at the end to see, you know, amongst your listeners of which one they would have preferred at the time.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so I guess we talked about now at the end of the episode, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put my album. I'll play the songs in order, just maybe like a minute, like through the first chorus of each. And we can listen to it together and just get an idea of what the album could have been like if Bruce just made one album called Human Town, which, you know, not a bad album title, actually. And
no, it's pretty good. You know? It actually would be a good Bruce one.
All over the world, the rain was pouring. kindness in the face of strangers. We ain't gonna find no miracles here. Well, you can wait on your blessings, my darling. I got a deal for you right here.
Well, I wanna said we'd walk together, baby, come what may. That come the twilight, should we lose our way? If as we're walking, a hand should slip free, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. We swore we'd travel, darling, side by side. We'd help each other stay in stride. But each lover's steps fall so differently. Well, I'll wait for you, and if I should fall behind, wait for me. Now everyone dreams of love lasting and true. Oh, but you and I know what this world can do. So let's make our steps clear that the other may see. And I'll wait for you, and if I should fall behind, wait for me. There's a beautiful river in the valley ahead. Beneath the oak's bough, soon we will be wed. Should we lose each other in the shadow of the evening trees, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. Darling, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. Yeah, I'll wait for you. Should I fall behind, wait for me. I'll wait.
If you said to Bruce, you know, your album's called Human Town, what should the cover be? He'd say a picture of my face.
Way too close and with a really shitty font.
Yeah. Because my face says Human Town, you know? Yeah. What do you think of when you think of the river? Oh, my face. Mess my hair up a little. The river.
What do you think of?
I look like I fell in a river.
As opposed to, what do you think of Born in the USA, my ass?
Yeah, yeah. I never. Maybe Born in the USA was like a shitting joke. Like the turd was born. Oh boy.
I'll edit
that part out. Okay, so you think we should go to episode 2 now? That was about 45 minutes, and then with the music,
yeah,
I mean, I'll edit it.
Oh yeah.
I'll edit some of the stupid shit I set out, and then put the music at the
leave
end.
Leave all the stupid shit I said.
Yeah,
that's great.
I'll be back.